Welcome to Creators by Moonlight, real conversations with content creators.
William Mark McCullough is an actor from Savannah, Georgia. He entered the film industry the hard way, with no connections, and has since risen to working on major projects alongside the likes of Tom Cruise, Glenn Close, and Amy Adams. In this episode, he talks about walking away from a promising legal career, overcoming tragedy, and what most struggling actors are doing wrong.
Authenticity resonates with people. And I would much rather move through the world as a single malt scotch than a blended whiskey. I am totally fine with someone looking at who I really am and saying, that ain't for me. William Mark McCullough. I'm from Savannah, Georgia. I grew up in and around Savannah. And when I graduated from high school, I couldn't wait to leave. Did not appreciate the city at all. I think a lot of folks who grew up in smaller towns feel the same way. And I ended up going to a college up in Macon, Georgia. Then I went to law school in D.C. and made it out to L.A. for a long time. But I am happily now back in Savannah. I grew up in Savannah with a large family. They were hardworking folks, but they weren't in the art world. They weren't educated. They just worked really hard. And it just never occurred to me, to be honest, that I'd ever be able to have a career in art, any type of art. I just didn't know anyone in that field. You know, as a kid, like I think lots of kids, you know, I love to play make-believe and have tons of movies and TV shows that I watched. But I always thought of actors and filmmakers as kind of those special people way out there somewhere in Hollywood that they just weren't like the rest of us. And to be quite honest, that mindset actually carried with me for a long time. Even when I moved to LA to pursue acting, I still had that mindset in many ways because there were so few people that I knew who were pursuing acting who did it on any level that was professional. You know, I think I was in LA for 2 or 3 years taking tons of acting classes before I met anyone who'd ever been in a movie that came out to theaters or had been in a TV show that, you know, you could turn on the TV and watch. So it was interesting. I mean, I had a good childhood. You know, you know the world that you grow up in, and, you know, I had loving family and friends, and they were very supportive. But just the idea of being an actor is something that just never crossed my mind. And it was much later before the idea of being an actor ever popped up for me.
It was a college art requirement that eventually ignited Mark's interest in acting. Despite discovering his passion, he did not immediately opt for an acting career, deciding upon law instead.
So I was going to college, like I said, at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, and I was studying political science. And in the school, you had to take a certain number of art classes. And I remember to graduate, there was only 2 classes available that I could take. One was art history and the other was acting. And I was pretty sure I'd fail art history. So I signed up for acting. I walked in the class the first day, I'm gonna be honest, with so much disdain because I was considered myself very logical and I wasn't artistic. And we all know those wonderful, delightful theater kids, right? I mean, they were great, but I was just not that. Taking this acting class, and I'm in a small classroom with 11 or 12 students. There's fluorescent lighting, and I had to do my very first monologue. And I'll never forget it because it was the final monologue from Dr. Faustus. And when I finished it, my whole body was on fire. And I've never done crack, but I imagine it's what crack feels like because it felt amazing. And I knew at that point, this is something that I love. Although I had great professors at Mercer, one of the things that I didn't learn there, and I think this is a failing of a lot of schools that teach acting, I didn't learn one thing about how to actually get a job as an actor. So I graduated and I was just lost. I'd come back to Savannah over the summer and I was trying out for local community theater with no idea how to actually turn my passion for acting into a profession that could pay my bills. And so at a loss, I did what I think a lot of folks do. I decided to go to law school and kind of give me 3 years to think about things. And I'd always been interested in politics and DC was fascinating to me. So I went to law school in DC. And the only thing I enjoyed in law school was standing in front of a jury and making arguments. I hated researching. I hated writing papers. It just didn't do anything for me at all. But, you know, you get on a path, the fallacy of sunken costs, right? I spent 3 years in law school. I spent tons of money. I get out and I didn't want to do it, but everyone was telling me, hey, you put so much time and effort in this, you got to do it. So I went along with the flow. and I was miserable. Luckily for me, just a few short months after I started working, I'd taken a trip down to Nicaragua, got in a really bad car accident and almost died. And I spent about 5 weeks in the hospital there, and it made me reevaluate my life. I remember lying in the hospital bed thinking, I almost died, and I'm doing something that I am not at all passionate about. There's plenty of other people who were, just wasn't my calling. So when I healed up enough, I came back to the States, quit my job, and moved to LA. I went there with literally nothing. Like, I didn't know anybody. I've been working as a prosecutor for a few months. So I didn't have any money. I had no connections. I didn't know how to do a resume. I didn't know anything about headshots. You know, I think back to my first headshots and I just cringe at how ridiculously stupid they looked. You know, it was a tough, tough transition for me. I lovingly refer to those years as my ramen noodle years, where I just struggled. And the only thing that kept me going was the fact that I knew I loved acting. You know, I started doing student films and short films and horrible low budget films that I hope no one can ever find. But what I knew is that when I was on a set, even if it was a $50 budget where I got paid with Subway sandwiches, that I didn't get to choose what was on the toppings of the sandwich, I loved it. And luckily, I just was hard-headed enough that I didn't quit. You know, it was a combination of me kind of figuring out what to do. And I found really great mentors along the way who guided me. And I found a few amazing acting teachers who were working actors who kind of cut through the BS and told me the real world things I needed to know to actually turn this passion I had into an actual business. I actually studied for a long time with a producer who had been a huge producer on TV shows back in the late 70s and early 80s. He didn't spend 1 second teaching me how to act. He spent all the time teaching me how to book jobs, the things that producers are looking for that matter way more than your acting talent. Once I kind of gained the skills, obviously you need certain level skills to work. Once I gained those and the knowledge of how to turn those skills into an actual viable job, that's when things started happening for me. But it was a long, brutal journey to get where I needed to go.
Mark believes his initial experiences in LA exposed a major flaw in the talent pipeline that prevents most individuals from becoming working actors. He had an epiphany when a branding class caused him to stop playing characters and play himself as the character instead.
Unfortunately, I think that most actors, or most people who want to be actors, never find that mentor. They never find folks who kind of guide them and teach them the path they need to take. If you just look at the numbers, LA's probably got 2 million people pursuing acting. New York's got 1 million. Chicago, Atlanta. I mean, so many cities are filled with people who've actually left their home, moved to a city to pursue acting. That doesn't count the millions who are in small towns around the country who want to be actors. And the tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of those people who actually turn their dream into a career is just so small. You look at SAG. You know, so SAG-AFTRA is the union for professional actors. There's 180,000 people in SAG. Of those 180,000 people, 3% make their living from doing TV and film. Only 13% of SAG members make more than $26,000 a year. Most of those make it from doing commercials. And there's nothing wrong with commercials. It's not my passion. But even in the professional acting world, only 3% of the people who are in that world actually make their living from acting. So that's clear that the vast majority of people who want to be actors, unfortunately, don't succeed, at least as professional actors. I mean, that's not to say there's lots of folks doing community theater and student films, and there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, something I tell my students, and just on set the last couple of weeks, I was talking to a young new actor, and I told him that the number one issue I see with people starting out as acting is they take advice from other people who are not successful. You know, and I've seen it over and over and over. And the way I think of it, you know, the acting career is kind of like a mountain. And, you know, the top of the mountain are the Tom Cruises and Brad Pitts and Angelina Jolie's of the world. And at the bottom of the mountain is where 99.9% of the people who want to be actors are standing. And the people at the bottom of the mountain so often just ask the guy next to them, hey, how do I get up the mountain? Or they'll ask the guy who is 3 feet above them on the mountain, hey, how do I get up the mountain? I would always tell people, nobody can definitely tell you how to get any higher up that mountain than where they are. Because if they could tell you how to get there, why aren't they there, right? I know when I was in LA, I took so many classes from acting teachers. Literally, first day in class, I'd raise my hand. Hey, how do I turn this into a business? And they'd always say the same thing. Oh, just become really good and they can't ignore you. To which I'd always reply, they ignored you because you're here teaching acting classes. So it didn't work for you. Why is it going to work for me? I realized that LA is filled with people who move to LA to become actors. They don't succeed, so they become acting teachers, and they then proceed to teach other actors how to succeed at something that they failed at. You know, it's like I can do a little plumbing around my house, but I ain't a plumber. And if a real plumber walked in and saw me doing some work, they would laugh in my face, right? And so that's something I see all the time. People spend years spinning their wheels, listening to stupid advice from people who are not necessarily ill-willed. They're just ignorant. And they waste years. And unfortunately, many times they give up on their dreams because they don't know how to put them into action. I guarantee you, there are many, many acting students that I was in class with years ago who were much better actors than me. And they see me in TV shows and films. And I guarantee you, they say to themselves, why did that guy make it when I'm so much better than him? And they're right. From an acting perspective, they're great. But that's just part of the story. There are plenty of small restaurants in the country that serve amazing hamburgers, and they're struggling to pay their rent. And McDonald's sells a billion of their crappy little hamburgers every year. The difference is the business model, the marketing, how they, you know, how they handle themselves. You know, I love Keanu Reeves as a human being, but he proves you don't have to be an amazing actor to be a very successful actor, right? I think so many actors get caught up in the acting class treadmill. And I teach acting classes. I have free time, and there's nothing wrong with teaching acting classes, but they think they're going to find some secret ingredient that's going to allow them to suddenly start booking jobs. And that's not how it works. You know, if someone wants to be a chef, they go to culinary school and they learn how to cook. Well, they don't keep going to additional culinary schools to learn different ways to cook. They need to then go learn how to run a restaurant. And that's what we have to do as actors. Yeah, you got to have certain basic skills, but then you got to learn how to turn those basic skills into a business. And if you don't have just the natural wherewithal to do it, or find a really good agent or manager who can guide you, or a really solid mentor or teacher who can tell you what to do, many times people just float in the wind until finally they give up thinking it can't be done. And I can tell you, as someone who lives, I don't even live in Savannah. I live in a little tiny town outside of Savannah. I travel all over the world acting, and I get to work with A-list actors. And, you know, I'm good enough, but I don't claim to be some amazing actor. But I do know how to run my business. And I'll just put this in perspective. When I walk onto set, I never say to myself, I'm the best actor here. Number one, probably not true. Number two, it doesn't help me. But what I do say to myself, every single set I walk onto, I say, I'm going to be the least pain in the ass of any actor on the set. That way, the people I work with will want to work with me again, because life is short, you know what I mean? And people want to work with people who are good, but also easy to work with. That's been one of the key things for me to realize. And I can say this as a filmmaker, when I'm looking to hire actors, yeah, it's great if you get someone who's brilliant, but it's much better to get someone who's good and easy to work with. So I probably spent about 6 years in LA just absolutely spinning my wheels, getting nowhere, doing the same things that every other person was doing who was pursuing acting. I made every mistake that every actor's ever made. Every mistake, I did every stupid thing. I did everything that you could waste your time on and waste your money on. I did it. But I gotta say, once those folks came into my life and kind of guided me, I remember the very first professional job I booked was as t-shirt guy on some ABC show called Secrets and Lies, right? I had, I think, 5 lines in this show. And I was thrilled, right? T-shirt guy was an exciting time for me. And just as an aside, the first 3 or 4 times you book t-shirt guy, cop number 3, teacher, it's really, really exciting. It's not so exciting the 10th time you've done it. Right? When you're just a little tiny role that's there to move the story along, really fun at first. It gets old pretty fast. That's why I always talk to people about the fact you have to constantly be moving up the levels of this industry so that it stays interesting and fun and exciting. But I booked T-shirt guy and just started booking because I'd spent years kind of like in the wilderness, roaming around, building up skill sets, working on mindset, learning the techniques of how to run my business, how to market. And once they all coalesced, from t-shirt guy, it took me 9 months. I mean, I booked a lot of things during the 9 months, but 9 months after t-shirt guy, I was sitting next to Tom Cruise, working with him one-on-one for 2 months in Atlanta, Georgia, in South America, and in New Orleans. It felt like it was that, you know, just so quick. Now, again, I'd put in years of hard work prior to that, but once I had all the pistons firing correctly, I mean, it just went boom, 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 right? Really, for me, the thing that catapulted my career was the movie with Tom Cruise. It was American Made. At that point was when I was able to start making my living as an actor. Up until that point, the 9 months prior to that, I was acting, but not quite making enough to actually pay all my bills. So I still had to do other things. But once American Made came, I never had to do another thing to actually pay my bills except act. That's not to say that if you are brand new, it's going to be 9 months from the time you start acting to the time you're a full-time working actor. But I can say it doesn't have to be long. I've had students who were insurance salesmen. They bagged groceries at Publix. They worked at the bank as a teller. And I taught them the steps they needed to follow. And 2 years later, they're full-time working actors. One of my former students just won Best Actor in a Feature Film, the Diamond Awards, this past week. I was so proud of him. He very quickly turned his passion into a career. And I was able to, thankfully, and this is what I try to do with all my students, is help them avoid the stupid things that I did and the stupid things that so many new actors did. You know, I follow a lot of actors online, you know, folks who come to my classes or I meet them at functions, and I'll see them online doing the stupid things that I did. And I so badly want to reach out. So please stop doing that. I don't do that anymore because no one wants to get unsolicited advice. And I've learned that the hard way, but it doesn't take long. If you're working hard and being smart, I think that anyone can become a full-time working actor in 2.5 years of consistent, smart, hard work. I often play characters that are not very nice, that are often violent, and they often do very, very bad things. I just finished the lead in a movie in Atlanta where I'm playing a character on death row who killed a whole family with a crowbar. So not a nice guy. It's interesting, when I moved to LA, I went there fully expecting to play the good-hearted, smart guy fighting for goodness and justice in the world because I viewed myself that way, right? I thought of myself as like just a really good guy. And I thought certainly they on the other side of the table will see that and cast me in those roles. But I didn't book those roles, ever. It took me a long time to understand why that was. When I first got to LA, I'd taken a branding class and I thought it was ridiculous. I'd go around to strangers and they would had a little form with a bunch of adjectives. And all they did was look at me sitting over on a park bench or sitting in a coffee shop, and they would circle adjectives that they thought applied to me. And then my job was to tally up all those adjectives from like 100 surveys and kind of get a sense of how strangers thought about me when they didn't know me and they didn't interact with me. And I remember looking at the results and thinking, this is obviously wrong because I'm a super sweet, nice, smart guy. And the words they're circling are not nice words. They were words like violent, unpredictable, dark. It was shocking to me. And I did that class with a good friend of mine. He got his back and he said, okay. And he just implemented. He took those words and he implemented his branding. So he made his headshots reflect those words. He made his demo reel reflect those words. And very quickly, he became a full-time working actor. And I remember thinking, that's insane. I'm a great actor. I can play all these different kinds of roles. I'm not going to lock myself into something like that. That's part of the reason I struggled for a long time. I remember one of the things that was a precursor to me getting my footing in this industry. I had run into a casting associate at a film festival and we were having drinks. And she just said, hey, you know, I've seen you do a lot of self-tape auditions. I'm like, yeah. She was like, well, so you get callbacks. I'm like, yeah. She goes, but you never booked the role. Yeah. She goes, you don't know why? I was like, absolutely. So the reason you don't book the role is because you're a good actor. And I said to her, well, I thought that's the point. She goes, no, you're a good actor. You're good enough to every once in a while you get a callback, but you'll never beat the guy who is the role. She goes, I have no idea what you bring to the table because every audition, you just do a different character. And it's pretty good, but you got to beat 100 to 200 guys to book that role. And it hit me. And so I went home and I took out these branding words, this worksheets I'd done years earlier. And I implemented them. And 1 month later, I booked T-shirt guy. And it was just boom, boom, boom. And T-shirt guy was this violent redneck who's threatening the lead of the show. And I've literally built my career leaning into those branding words. And all that is, it's when people don't know me, what do they feel in their gut about me, right? Because here's the deal. When I go into an audition, they don't know me, especially they watch a self-tape. They don't know me. The casting director may know of me. The directors and producers don't know me. Audiences certainly don't know me. All they know is what I give off on camera. And what I've learned is everyone gives something off on camera that's absolutely unique and special. And the key, huge key to becoming successful as an actor, and I think in many ways becoming successful in life, is number one, being true to who you are and just leaning in to that, right? So for me, if I just am me without trying, on camera, that's going to come across with some dark edges. It's amazing. Like before I understood that, you know, I would do tons of work on auditions. You know, if I had a 3-line audition on CSI, I do a 5-page backstory, right? I'd be working out my objectives and obstacles and my, you know, emotional substitution on my little 3-line, you know, audition. Never booked, never won any kind of acting awards. And if people knew how little work I have to do now, it is shocking. Yet I work professionally all the time with A-list actors and A-list directors. I've won numerous best acting awards. And I'll do these interviews with people and they ask me, you know, what's the secret? What do you do? And I always say the same thing. I walk in the room and play make-believe. That's it. That's simple. It's the same thing I did when I was 7 years old. A lot of people think that I'm lying, but I'm not. And I think that's what the vast majority of working actors do. They just bring who they are to the table. And I hear a lot of talk about actors saying they want to make bold choices. And what that often results in is over-the-top fake acting. I think the boldest choice you can make as an actor, and I position the boldest choice you can make as a human, is to walk in as you, who you are, and bring it to the table. Because every single human being on earth has their own wonderfully unique combination of loves and hates and dislikes and prejudices and dreams and experiences. And if you lean into that, that is the boldest choice you can make. And I'll say this as a filmmaker, which just as a human, for many, many years of my life, every room I walked into, before walking the room, I think, what do they want? And I would try to put on a facade that would make the people in that room like me. I went on a coffee date with some girl. It's like, okay, what do I think she's looking for? And I'd put on that facade. Well, the problem is most people can see through that. And even if you do pull it off for a little while, you can't hold that for very long. And once I had the realization that who I was enough across the board as an actor, as a human, as a filmmaker, everything changed. As a filmmaker, I'll go into big production companies or big agencies to pitch projects. And usually the way it's set up, you have like 10 or 15 minute appointments and they'll just line people up back to back to back. And you go in and do your few minutes and you're out the door. And I did that for a long time when I put on a facade, like a mask. And once I let that go and just said, you know what? Mark's walking in the door. So often now I'll go into these meetings and eventually the secretary will walk in and she'll say, sir, we've got in this meeting, we've got 6 people waiting, because authenticity resonates with people. And I would much rather move through the world as a single malt scotch than a blended whiskey, right? I am totally fine with someone looking at who I really am and saying, nah, that ain't for me. That's totally valid because, you know, I got lots of flaws. But I want to get to the people who are for me very quickly. The same with acting. You ask any cast member in the Southeast what I bring to the table, they'll tell you. They know what I bring to the table. You ask cast members in Chicago, in LA, they know what I bring to the table because I bring it every single time. And, you know, there can be people can say a lot of things about me in life, and there's plenty of bad things to say because I'm a very flawed human being. But what they can't say is that I'm fake. What they get is the real thing, for good or for bad.
Mark talks about the good times and occasional tragedies he's dealt with in his career. No matter what occurs on a project, Mark believes in a level-headed approach that emphasizes perseverance.
So 2 movies stand out for me. One was Hillbilly Elegy, which is directed by Ron Howard. That stood out for me in my mind because I just love Ron Howard. As a kid, my dad loved The Andy Griffith Show. I loved Happy Days. Obviously, when Ron Howard became a director, I've loved all of his films. I remember when I did a self-tape audition for the role and I got called to Atlanta to do a callback. And when I walked in the room, it was just Ron Howard sitting behind a table. And you know, you go on these callbacks, you don't know if you're going to walk in and there's one person or there's 25 people sitting there. And it was just Ron. And he stands up and he walks around the table and shakes my hand and says, thank you for driving all the way up from Savannah. I've never had a director do that before. And this is Ron Howard. He was as nice as you can possibly imagine. You know, the old saying, you know, don't meet your heroes because you might be disappointed. That was not the case with Ron Howard. You know, in the film, I got to work with Glenn Close, Amy Adams, a few other really, really great actors that, you know, aren't famous. And it was just a joy. You know, it's the only film I've ever done where we actually did rehearsals. Prior to rolling camera, Ron did a full month of rehearsals in Atlanta, and the actors would go to the set of wherever they were filming. I was filming at someone's house just out in the country. There's no crew there, just Ron Howard and the actors. And you just run the scenes all day. And that was just a delight. Usually when you're on set working with A-list actors, the first time you perform with them is when the camera's rolling. So that was a lot of fun. Glenn Close is someone I've admired for a long time, and getting to work with her a little was an absolute joy. You know, the other film, Logan Lucky, that was Steven Soderbergh. He was so fast. I wasn't familiar with the way he worked. What he does is what you see on screen is what he shoots, and that's it. So he'll be recording the scene, and he does his own, he's his own cinematographer. So he's holding the camera. When he gets finished, when he knows he wants to do a cut, he goes stop, and he'll move the camera to another position and say, okay, start, and you just pick up from where you left off. I'd never done that before in my life, and I haven't done it since. The guy just sees the movie in his head, so he doesn't shoot superfluous footage. But he shoots eight-hour days, which is just almost unheard of in this industry. I remember the really cool thing. I'd gone in for the callback for that, and it was Carmen Cuba was the casting director. Steven Soderbergh wasn't there. And I went in, and in the audition piece, I had this big monologue, and I totally screwed it up. I mean, just totally. You know, I was like, oh, okay, well, I walked out and drove back to Savannah. I booked the job. And I remember realizing at that point, if the role's right for you, it's right for you. And it doesn't matter if you screw up a few lines or you stumble a little bit, they can see through that. And if it's wrong for you, I don't care what kind of brilliant, amazing performance you do, it's wrong for you, right? So that was a great eye-opening moment for me. But when I got on set, I met Channing Tatum. And, you know, just to be honest, I'd never really watched a lot of Channing Tatum's films at that point. I'm now a huge fan of his because he was literally the most down-to-earth, fun, easygoing guy I've ever worked with on a set. He was so friendly and just giving as an actor. So yeah, the whole experience. I remember at the end of the shoot, I walked up to Soderbergh and I said, man, you were the fastest director I've ever worked with. He looks at me, smiles, and he says, if you can't be the best, you might as well be the fastest. I'd argue he's pretty damn good too. But those two were just, they were just a blast for me. And both of them shot in Atlanta too. So American Made was the point in my career where I was able to act full time. But when we were on set, like, you know, one of the producers had produced huge, huge films. And everyone expected this movie to be a massive hit. Unfortunately, our last day of filming in Colombia, one of our planes crashed and it killed our lead stunt pilot. It killed our Colombian pilot and it paralyzed my stunt double from the waist down, which was a horrible tragedy. Because of that crash, obviously there were numerous lawsuits filed. I remember 6 months before the film came out, Universal reached out to my publicist asking if I'd be willing to go to Europe and do a press junket, which of course I was like, my schedule will be clear for that. Well, they didn't do the press junket because the fear from all these lawsuits caused them to back off their advertising, and they did almost no advertising for this film. You know, Tom Cruise didn't do any of the late night talk shows. They didn't even have a red carpet premiere for the film, which is unheard of for an $80 million film. You know, it's one of those things that I will always look at that movie with fondness and love and a bit of sadness about what happened, but it didn't have the huge impact on my career that my agents and manager thought it would have. They thought, oh, this is going to be a catapulter, right? A movie to the top tiers. That didn't happen. But that's just the way this business works. And it was a great lesson for me because I remember that movie came out on a Friday night. I went to see it just at the theater like any other person. And Monday morning, I just did another audition. And Tuesday, I did another audition. You know, it was like, there was no huge change in my career. It was just a little baby step up. And I always tell that to actors, you know, I'll have someone come to me and they book one or two lines on a TV show or film and they're so excited. They're like, oh my God, when this comes out, everything's going to change. And I remind them that that's probably not the case. You hear these stories of people who are discovered and blow up, and that does happen. But I remind people every week, someone wins the lottery, right? I mean, it does happen. But that's not the way it happens for the vast, vast majority of people. The vast majority of people, it's just a slow, steady climb up the mountain. And you just have to stay dedicated and understand there's going to be ups and downs. I mean, gosh knows, all of us dealt with the downs of COVID and then in the entertainment industry. You know, 2023 was rough. Half the year, nothing was being made basically because of the strikes. The first half of the year, very little was being made because the production companies and the studios and networks feared a coming strike. And all you can do, like in any industry, is stay focused, make whatever adjustments you can make, and keep moving forward.
Mark has broken down the usually mysterious profession of acting into concrete terms, using levels that allow an actor to determine their current professional status and the steps needed to advance. He talks about his own goals for long-term advancement.
I break acting down into five basic levels. Level one is the level that most people are interacting at, where they're doing student films and short films and low-budget films. I call it the intern level. Most actors remain in that level their entire time they're pursuing acting. Level two, many, many, many fewer people make it to level two. Level two is the first professional level. And for TV, that's what we call co-star roles. Those are the waitress, cop, the characters that help move the story along, but they're not part of the story. And for film, that's what we call day players, where they come in usually for one day, do a couple of lines, and they're gone. Those people who do make it to level two, the vast majority of actors, unfortunately, remain in level two. Level three, many fewer people are in that. That's going to be your guest star roles on TV. So like if you were to talk about something like Law and Order, it would be the character that week that is accused of the murder, you know, the family who lost their child. They're an important part of the story, but they're not a series regular, right? They're only in that episode or maybe a few episodes. For film, it's going to be the major supporting characters. Once you're at level three, that's where you can start making your living as an actor. I spent way too long at level one, making almost no money. Luckily, when I got to level two, I was able to blow through it very quickly. But that was just because I'd spent way too long at level one. I was at level three for a very long time. But again, you can pay your bills at level three. Level four is a series regular. So Law and Order, that's going to be the detectives and the lawyers that the show, you know, the show's following. And in film, it's going to be the leads in the movie. And then level five is famous. So the last 6, 7 months, 9 months, whatever, you know, I've been going into level four. At each stage, you're going to spend a little time, you're peeking into that level above you until you finally switch over completely to the level above you. So I'm at three going into four. I tell people, shoot for level five, because as human beings, the joy comes from the pursuit of something more, the pursuit of something bigger. Now, it is very difficult in today's environment to become a movie star like Tom Cruise. There's a reason they call him the last movie star, because there are just so many outlets, so many movies. It's a much better time now than 20 years ago to become a working actor because there's so many projects available, but it's much more difficult to become a movie star because there's so many projects available. You know, 1980, to be a top 10 TV show, you'd have 30 million viewers. Today, you only need 3 million viewers to be a top 10 TV show, to put it in perspective. So I think the days of becoming Tom Cruise are probably over for most people. And to be quite honest, there's a lot of negatives that come with that level of fame. But there's also some positives that come with some level of fame. Usually it's at level five where you're getting offered roles in movies and TV shows, and you get to work with the directors and the actors that you want to work with, and you have pretty full control over your schedule and what you're doing. That sounds pretty nice. But for me, again, each level has many, many sub-levels, right? So my personality type is I'm always shooting for higher and higher levels. But at the same time, fame for fame's sake has never interested me in the least. I just don't care about being famous, but there are some nice accoutrements that comes with some level of being in level five. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to keep climbing inch by inch up that mountain, and I'll either get as high as I can or die. That's the choices. My next big goal is to book a series regular on a really great TV show, playing a character that I love, that's fun to play, working with a team that's fun to work with. I mean, I definitely have done TV shows where I called my manager up after it and said, I don't want to be a series regular on this show because the people are not fun to work with, right? So, you know, the longer you're in this business, you realize it's a fun job, but at the end of the day, it is a job, right? There's things that are much more important, family, your health, your spirituality, all this stuff's way more important than acting. But I do love it, you know, it's a job that I very much enjoy. The more I can do it, the better. And the more fun, exciting roles I can play, it's just more fun for me. But to be quite honest, when I was in LA at level one, doing student films and short films and struggling and barely able to pay my rent, and I do student films on the weekends, right? If I never figured out the business and I'd made it to 80 and I'm still doing those student films and I'm laying on my deathbed, I would have died a happy man because I loved acting, still love acting. There is nothing in the world that I enjoy more than walking onto a set from a camera and bringing a scene to life. I just love it. I prefer to get paid where I can make my payments for all my bills doing it. But again, if I hadn't figured that out, at no point would I look back and go, oh, this was a wasted life because I never became successful or this or that. Absolutely not. And if I never booked another acting job the rest of my life, I'm a very happy man. Like, I feel so fortunate. You know, I've been able to work with literally numerous childhood heroes of mine, actors that I grew up watching that I just love. Like, you know, I did a fun little role on Cobra Kai. I'd watched season one all the way through in one sitting. And I wrote my manager, my agent, I said, hey, I don't care if it's one word, I want to be on this show. So they eventually found a role that I'd work, and it's a little tiny role, But I got to work with Daniel, you know, the Karate Kid. And if you had told eighth grade Mark that one day he'd be in a TV show getting in a fight with the Karate Kid, I would have just not believed that in a million years, right? And so I didn't make any money on that show. Nobody's gonna watch that show and go, who was the guy there? Yeah, you know, the redneck looking dude. Nobody cared, right? I care. It was just an absolute joy for me. And that's happened to me so many times. I worked on a project last year that I can't talk about, but it was literally a childhood dream come true. I wake up every day and I understand how fortunate I am. I'm lucky that it did take me so long to figure this out. If I had moved to LA at 18 and blown up immediately, I wouldn't appreciate all the wonderful little joys that come my way. But because I know what struggle is like, and I have lots of friends and family who work really hard doing jobs that they don't necessarily love, every time I'm working, I'm happy. And when I'm not on a set, I'm still happy because I enjoy auditioning. I enjoy marketing. I enjoy chatting with casting directors or agents. You know, I love everything about my business. So the fame thing, I mean, if I became famous for a good reason, obviously no one wants to become famous for a bad reason. But if I became famous because I'm in some cool movie or TV show, well, whatever, I could deal with that. But that's not the driving force. But just playing make-believe on really, really cool projects is. But that's not to say that I'm not every single day working to climb that mountain, because that also brings me joy. And I say this to people all the time. You know, I know a lot of actors who've been acting for 10, 15, 20 years, and they'll do one or two or three little tiny co-star roles a year where they're playing teacher or cop number three or reporter. There's nothing wrong with that other than the fact that they should be moving up the levels of this industry, right? They should learn what they're doing wrong, fix it so they can move up. Because it's like anything. If you're a lawyer, right, in the world that I came from, the legal world, and you go to a big corporate law firm as an associate and you've been an associate for a year and a half, that's absolutely normal. But if you've been a lawyer for 25 years and you're still an associate, you're doing something wrong. You should be a partner by that point. And so I say that actors, like getting to level five, whatever, that's famous, who the hell knows? But getting to level three, level four, there's no reason that anybody pursuing acting can't do that. Like I said, it always comes back to smart, dedicated, hard work, building a strong relationship with folks in the industry. So I tell folks, don't get comfortable just booking. Get comfortable booking and constantly moving forward in your career.
Mark discusses his daily life as a professional actor, as well as advice for keeping it all in perspective.
My daily schedule, obviously, it's different every day. In addition to being an actor, I'm also a filmmaker. So, for instance, today, I had an audition to do. So I got up, I did my audition, and then I spent the rest of the day working on a script and working on some business plans for some pitches. But as an actor specifically, most of my job is auditioning and marketing. When I first got started, that was 99% of my job because I worked really, really hard and I'd go to a set and I'd work for one day. Fortunately now, being on set is a much bigger percentage of my time because last year sucked. But 2022, I was probably on set, you know, 3 months out of the year, which makes me happy. This year, you know, I spent the first 3 weeks on set. So I'm hoping those numbers always get more and more and more. But my job is to market myself to those people who can hire me, letting them know what my product is. And then when they give me an opportunity to pitch to them, which is doing an audition, deliver the goods. That's my real job. I look at going to set as vacation. I do that for free. I don't know if I'm telling producers that, but I'd act for free. What they're paying me for is all the work I do to get me on set. But it's not that much work. Obviously, when I started, it was a lot more work because everything you're kind of crafting from scratch. Now it's a lot of, you know, updating things like update your IMDb, update your EPK, update your resume. You know, and I can turn auditions around now so quickly, it's ridiculous. I've just been doing it a long time. So the actual grunt work of acting does not take a lot of time at all anymore. To be quite honest, most of my non-acting time when I'm not on set is actually spent working in filmmaking. And most of that time is spent chasing investors. Finding money is always the big job when it comes to trying to make films or TV shows. I also make sure that I take time every day to get to the gym, work out, stay healthy, try to make time when I can to see friends and loved ones and family. Because again, the older I get, the more I realize acting is important, but it's not the most important thing in my life. There are other things that are more important than acting. But I'll say this, you know, I stay busy every day and I love every minute of it. And I wake up every single morning excited about what the day holds, And something that this business has that a lot of jobs don't have is this wonderful sensation of hope. I wake up every day in the back of my mind thinking, I might book something amazing today. I might get called back to one of the TV shows I'm working on for another episode, whatever. It's like, if you ask most people, hey, what are you doing next April? They probably know. I'm going to be at a job, or I'm going to be on vacation, or I'll be doing this or that. I don't know what I'm doing in 2 weeks. I certainly don't know what I'm doing in 3 months. This business, people look at the negative side, which is it's chaotic and you never know what's going to happen. I prefer to look at the positive side of that, which is it's wonderfully unique and exciting. And I get to be surprised a lot about what's happening next.
Thanks for listening to Creators by Moonlight. Email the show at creatorsbymoonlight@gmail.com and follow the show on social at Creators by Moonlight.